Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books. My guest is Joshua Hood, who has taken over the late Robert Ludlum's Treadstone series and is out with The Treadstone Resurrection. We find the protagonist, Adam Hayes, an alum of Operation Treadstone, working a blue-collar job in Washington State. But as Michael Corleone said in The Godfather Part 3, just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in. So Joshua, let's start with the basic. What is Operation Treadstone?
Operation Treadstone, as we know from the movies, is a kind of off-the-books kill squad. That is, they take soldiers who and other people, and they use behavior modification and intense training techniques to turn them into these unquestioning assassins who work for the government.
So it's a black ops, meaning completely off the books, kind of off the books?
It is totally off the books. And I did some research going into this. Obviously, I'd seen the movies and read the books, but I found an interesting kind of bylaw in the national security doctrine that under the Reagan administration that said that, you know, it is illegal to conduct assassinations, to basically think about assassinations. So in essence, Treadstone is illegal, and that is why it is so dark, off the books, off the grid type thing.
So having seen all that he's seen, where is Adam Hayes at mentally as he's working as a carpenter in a rural area?
Well, his the reason, like you said earlier, he has chosen to lead Treadstone, which is a pretty big distinction from Jason Bourne, who, you know, was hurt in the line of duty and doesn't recall. And I tried to focus on that. I found that the most fascinating was that Adam Hayes actually does remember everything that he's done, and so he has the story begins. He's gotten out of Treadstone. He's married. He has a child, and he's suffering from extreme post-traumatic stress, and his wife, therefore, doesn't feel particularly comfortable around him and is having him around their child, and she's given him 18 months to kind of get his head straight, so he moves out to Washington State, where he is working as a carpenter and seeking professional help when he's pulled back into the world.
And he essentially, I don't know how much you want to give away, but he essentially gets a notification, and away we go with the plot, right?
Correct, yeah. He one of those, oh, I should open that email type thing.
So, you know, the whole idea about a spouse and the interaction, I read a lot of these books about veterans returning from war or people returning from these Black Ops missions, and they never really seem to stress the spouse. You do that in the book. Why is that so important?
Well, two reasons, really. The first is my son turns three in March, and so originally when the book was, we were planning the book, it was to take place directly after the movies, and the movies, Treadstone, had been closed. And so I was thinking one day, what would happen to these guys? I'm sure they don't have a 401k plan, or I mean, what do you put on a resume after you've done this for 20-something years? And naturally, I was kind of just looking at my life and thinking, well, like you said, this doesn't really exist too much, but I know it's a huge problem in the veteran community, PTSD, especially coming back after you've been deployed a lot and your wife has taken over the household and you want to interject yourself as, you know, the man again. And I just thought it kind of interesting and very fascinating to say, well, what would a person look like? He can't be an assassin 24/7. What would it look like if he had a family? And what would that dynamic be? What would it look like on the page, especially if you throw in some extenuating circumstances like people trying to kill him?
You took over this world with Robert Ludlum. What was your familiarity with him and his world before you became part of it?
I'd read the books. I'd seen the movies. Obviously a huge fan. He was such a master. That's why this was kind of, wasn't easy, but he left such fertile ground, and I read a lot of interviews that he had done, and I just tried to follow in the footsteps of what he had laid down, or what I felt that he was trying to convey with his books.
When you, and I knew you read the interviews of Ludlum, but when you go back and hear interviews or read interviews with him, you don't care about that he's talking about a pet or something that he had. What do you pull out when you say, I have to jump into this world? What are you trying to pull out of an interview to sort of tap into his mind?
Well, the biggest thing was to try to understand the time and the place where this book was coming from. And it had the Cold War era, and the Bourne books were, you had a lot of Vietnam coming out, and then we're going into this, the Cold War, like I said. And I was able to take that idea, which you spoke about, and put that together with the War on Terror. So we had a very similar kind of backdrop, and a lot of the wording that he used, a lot of some of the places where he had found information, I was able to go back and try to, it was almost retracing his steps. And once I felt that I had the mindset, I was able to move forward with a book that I felt was in keeping with his traditions.
So the normal research you do for a book, you know, you go and do your research of whatever it is that you do. Here you essentially had to do twice the work because you had to get into Ludlum's style, right?
Well, that's one thing that I did not attempt, because my style is different than his, and my style, obviously the time has changed since those books were written and now, and I knew that there was no way I could, I thought if I mimicked it, it would be, if I fell short, obviously that would be an issue. So I tried to keep with the traditions and the feel of the book while writing it in my own voice.
I'm chatting with Joshua Hood about his new book, The Treadstone Resurrection. It's part of Robert Ludlum's series, and the book is available now wherever your fine books are sold. Jason, you're a veteran yourself, serving the 82nd Airborne Division. It's one of the famous names that I think a lot of us that don't even follow the military that closely, everybody knows the 82nd Airborne, but I think there's a lot of misconceptions. I picture it as just guys jumping out of planes all the time, but there's a lot more to it, right?
There is. Jumping out of planes takes a lot of the time, but the 82nd has been nicknamed America's Guard of Honor, and they used to tell us when the president calls 911, we're the one who answers, and simply because due to us being a light infantry unit, we could deploy anywhere within the world within 12 to 24 hours. So it was always, you're always training for that mission. You're always training knowing that at a moment's notice you could be called away, and it was just very rich history there.
And you can be called away for a long period of time, right?
Yeah, correct. My deployment to Afghanistan ended up, it was supposed to be 12 months, it ended up being 15 months, and so never really know exactly what you're getting into.
I thought of this as I watched the State of the Union address earlier this year when the soldier returned from overseas and saw his wife and family. You've experienced this. What's that like when you see a spouse, or I don't know if you had children at the time, but when you see a spouse that you haven't seen for that long? Because people do this publicly sometimes, but it seems like that's a very private emotional moment.
It is. It is. It's really a hard emotion to explain, and there's a disconnect right away because you haven't seen each other in a while, but obviously you're glad and grateful to be home, but there's an adjustment process that you go through. But the strangest thing that always struck me was the fact that due to planes and technology, literally beginning of the day you're in the Middle East, and by the end of the day or the early next morning you're back in the States, and it's sometimes very jarring.
Getting back to the book, this whole shadowy world of CIA Black Ops programs, great fodder for thrillers, and by their very nature they're highly secretive. So does this secrecy in real life give you a certain literary license where you don't have a reader emailing you and say, oh no, you got this detail wrong, the programs don't operate that way?
It does. You try to imagine, and it takes a lot of creativity to imagine how something like this would work. Luckily, during my time in the military, I was able to kind of view from a distance how special operations, special forces, and CIA paramilitaries operated. I just try to approach it as pragmatically as possible. Like, okay, I know they have the ability to do this, but how would they actually go about logistically or financially or training to accomplish this mission?
And then when you start writing about them, the events that you describe in the book move very quickly, but writing, by its very nature, slows them down for you. So does your brain a lot of times move faster than your fingers on the keyboard?
Sometimes my brain moves a little too slow.
But what you've seen, though, is that, these things happen and they end up, thinking, oh, this would make a great story for the novel or something, or it's something that you've seen. But when it comes down to put it on paper, it's not the easiest thing in the world, is it?
It's not. Sometimes it fits. Sometimes it doesn't fit. Sometimes you think you have a great idea and then you put it down on paper, and then as you're going along, something else comes up and it doesn't work anymore. So it's a constant adjustment, kind of a balancing act as the book evolves.
You've talked openly in previous interviews about PTSD, and so for you, how do those types of things manifest themselves in everyday life or everyday events?
Luckily, I was kind of diagnosed and treated early, so the typical triggers that occurred when I first got out, the discomfort being around large groups of people, et cetera, I learned how to deal with those early. And then directly after, I was lucky in that I got out of the military and immediately went to work for the Sheriff's Department and went into another small unit type family when I joined the SWAT team. I was there for about 8 years, so I was kind of, it was almost like a step-down program dealing with PTSD. I think the biggest thing is that I've noticed is when people you've been together with a unit or a group of guys, I was with, the same 12 people for almost 5 years, and then all of a sudden it's gone. But then when you get another support structure right away, it really helps. Now, the most typical things dealing with PTSD is the sleeping issues and things like that. And I tried to convey that and to put that into the book. And it was very cathartic writing this book and others. It really helps the PTSD, in my opinion, writing about it.
You mentioned about working for the sheriff's office. I know you worked as a sniper there. But I can just imagine, as a professional writer working for the sheriff's office, those must have been some of the most beautiful reports that you put together for local prosecutors.
Well, they didn't particularly like, you would think they would enjoy the flowery language, but they, like with Joe Friday, just a fact. So I guess they don't appreciate this, so I'll just give it to them straight.
All right. The book is Robert Ludlum's The Treadstone Resurrection by Joshua Hood. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold. Joshua, I'm so glad that you've picked up this series and run with them, because after Ludlum's death, just to be able to enjoy it now, it's just sort of like a gift that keeps on giving. And thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you very much for having me.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Roland the Thompson Gunner.